see you all. Thank you for joining us. I wanted to also thank David Hochhauser, who is our OU tech specialist, who is always here to help us. We really appreciate that. Like I say, at the beginning of every year, I think it might be a good segula. I remember when we used to daven at Nair in London, Rabbi Kimche was used to talk about what happens if it rains on first night Sukkot. That was always the segula, that it shouldn't rain on first night Sukkot. So maybe our segula is that we talk about what happens if the internet goes down. So like I'll remind you that if I disappear or if I freeze, my apologies in advance. Don't worry, please don't go away. I will be back with you as soon as I can. Hopefully that will work. Okay, we've got a lot to do. In a minute I'm going to announce the sponsorship of the Shir. Next week, if I could just look ahead, past Tisha B'Av, it's always nice to look past Tisha B'Av. I'd like to introduce the next series, which is going to be a new topic that we've never spoken about before. Baruch Hashem, there's no shortage of Torah. I'd like to talk about a few exotic kosher animals. Different aspects of different animals, that things, giraffes and swordfish and bison, all sorts of things that come up, some more common than others, and we'll look at that for a couple of weeks after this session. But for now, we're still in the 3 weeks, and we're dealing with our series on paradoxes, things which are, if you like, on the one hand, on the other hand, conflicting with each other, but somehow synthesized in a broader hashgraphic approach. 3 weeks ago, we looked at the issue of ahava and sinna, accepting people and rejecting people. 2 weeks ago, we looked at the issue of judgmentalism, of the mitzvah to judge people. There is a mitzvah to judge situations, not individuals, whereas there's a mitzvah not to be judgmental of people. Last week, we looked at the conflict between ben Adam l'makom and ben Adam l'chaveiro, when we set aside mitzvahs in order to keep mitzvahs, other mitzvahs for people. And today, I want to look at the issue of machlokas, which we'll introduce in just a couple of minutes, very suitable for Tisha B'Av tonight, but much broader than just Tisha B'Av. First of all, let me just mention the sponsorship, which we're extremely grateful to have. We have two sponsors for today's share. First of all, and you may remember from past years, this is often a sponsorship just for this share before Tisha B'Av. Miriam Marcus, a stalwart supporter of the share, has sponsored the share today in loving memory of her mother, Liba Pesha Bat Natan. On her third yahrzeit, I knew Miriam's mother a little bit, and it was always a delight to see her. We saw her on many occasions on Baruch Hashem on Simchas, and she passed away 3 years ago, and this sponsorship is in Le'ilu Nishmata. So her yahrzeit was yesterday, and also Miriam's grandfather, Natan Ben Moshe, whose yahrzeit is actually on Tisha B'Av, and this is his 55th yahrzeit. That's the first sponsorship. Thank you, Miriam. The second sponsorship is also related to a yahrzeit. Shelley Hirschberg has sponsored the Shir Le'ilu Nishmat. Her mother, Asna Bat Rav Shnir, which is her 16th yahrzeit, the day before Tisha B'Av, which is also today, so this is Mamash Boi Bayom. We have a couple of lines about Shelley's mother, who I did not know, but it says here, she personified Ahavat Chinam, loving other people, a modest person, accepted everyone for whom they were without judgments. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago. At her Leviah on Tisha B'Av, hundreds of people and Rebbeim of all hats came to pay their last respects, and may her memory be a blessing, and may she be a Melitz Yasha for all of us, and all of Am Yisrael. And we thank again Miriam and Shelley for the sponsorship, and the Shir should be Le'inu Nishmatam. Okay, so let's get into Machlokas. Everybody likes a bit of Machlokas now and then. I have called this Shir Machlokas the good, the bad, and the ugly, with apologies to 1960s cinema buffs. I thought that the title went very well, because actually we're going to look at four different types of machlokas. I'm not sure that this is always presented in quite the structure. Going from the best type of machlokas to the very worst type of machlokas, and we will indeed see that there is good machlokas, there is bad machlokas, and there is extremely ugly machlokas. And we'll see how that works and how to avoid one, and if you're going to be involved in machlokas, to at least be involved in the good stuff. So let's start from the very beginning. The obvious place to start is the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot, which deals directly with the issue of machloket. I'm just going to try and share my screen here, make sure I've got the right one. Hopefully you can see the screen. Can you see my shared screen there? Yes? Good. Thumbs up. Excellent. I will just, again, pop up the on the group chat, so that if there's anybody who is able to... I'll just put the file on there one more time, because there's always a couple of people that come in a couple of minutes late, which is okay, and they can get the file as well. Okay, so let's start from the very beginning. The Mishnah, quite well known, Pirkei Avos, says as follows: Kol machlokes shi l'shem shamayim sofer litkayim. Any machlokes which is for the sake of heaven, we need to define what that is, will continue, will endure. The she'enu l'shem shamayim, a machlokes which is not for the sake of heaven, ein sofer litkayim, will not endure. And the Mishnah says, Eizehi machlokes shehu l'shem shamayim. What is a machlokes which is for the sake of heaven? Zot machloket Hillel v'shamayim. Now look carefully, it's Hillel and Shammai, it's not Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, it's Hillel and Shammai, okay? She'enu l'shem Shammayim, zo machloket Korach v'chol Hadassah. This is a machloket between Korach and his band. So you have two types of machlokets compared and contrasted. One is l'shem Shammayim between Hillel and Shammai, excuse me, and the other is Shaloi l'shem Shammayim between Korach and his band of merry men. Now I'm not going to read number two, although number two is one of the key sources on this, but the Melechet Shlomo already picks up 400-500 years ago on Pirkei Avos that it doesn't say Machlokas, Korach, and Moshe. You'd have thought it would parallel Hillel and Shammai, Korach and Moshe. It says the Machlokas, which typifies Machlokas Shaloi L'Shem Shamayim, not for the sake of heaven, is between Korach and his men. And he points out here that that's exactly the point. It wasn't the machlokas between Korach and Moshe which was so archetypal of this. It was between the people themselves that were arguing. For example, he makes the point, and again, you can read this in your own time, he makes the point that Korach and the 250 Bnei Reuven were arguing about completely different things, and they were mutually exclusive. For example, Korach was arguing that it's not fair that Aaron HaKohen is the leader. Why? Because Aaron HaKohen is responsible for the Chet HaEgel, he should be displaced. On the other hand, if the Chet HaEgel has been forgiven, if the Chet HaEgel and Aaron HaKohen is still there, so the Bnei Reuven says, well, the only reason that the Levim are in place is because of the Chet HaEgel, is because of the sin of the golden calf. So if all is forgiven for Aaron HaKohen, then Korach, you should be off as well, because there's no reason why the Levim should be promoted over the Bechor, over the firstborn, which is Reuven, if indeed the Chet HaEgel has been forgiven. So everybody else is arguing with everybody else. And that's the whole point here. It's not Moshe and Korach, it's the band between Korach itself, all of whom were arguing with each other. And the point here is, we're going to see now, that that is the definition of Machlokas, Shaloi L'Shem Shamayim, which becomes a personal Machlokas. Let's have a look here in Rav Avadya Mibar Tanura, which will at least give us a good start. Number three. What is Machlokas L'Shem Shamayim and Lo L'Shem Shamayim? Says the Bar Tanura as follows. Machlokas Shehi L'Shem Shamayim, HaTachlis V'HaSoif HaMavukash, the desired goal and end of that kind of good machlokas, ma'oza machlokas lahasik ha'emet, is to try and get to truth, to try and understand the truth. It's about ideas, principles. V'zeh mitkayim, and that will go on and on and on and on. K'mo she'amru mitoch ha'vikuach yidbara ha'emet, because we never fully reach the truth, that's the point. We get closer and closer and closer, and we have different challenges. The search for truth is a never-ending search. That's why that kind of machlokas will never end. And we actually achieve certain things when we say halachas like Beis Hillel. We'll get there in a minute, that search for truth bears fruit. We get closer to a certain kind of truth. Although we'll see. Hillel and Shammai, Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, to work out which of them is actually more true than the other is not so straightforward. What's a machlokas which is not for l'shem shamayim? Tachlis hanirza ba, what is the desired end? Bakashas hasrora, it's about power, it's about politics, the avat hanitzuach, it's about victory. I need to win. I need to be the one that comes out on top. That's a machlokas shaloi l'shem shamayim. V'zetzof einu mikayim, and that can never continue. K'moshim matzina b'machlokas Korach v'Adasa, as we see with Korach and his men, Shitachlis was Sof Kavanos and he Bikashas are covered. They were really looking for covered. They were looking for personal honor, for Srara and leadership and power. And they all died. And that's exactly the point. A machlokas which seeks personal covered, honor, victory, can never, ever be sustained because everybody dies. That's the point. All of the, I'm sure you can all remember, all of the machloikis in your grandparents' generation, your great-grandpa, all of this one didn't speak to this one, and that one didn't speak to that one, and this shul didn't speak to that shul. Well, I've got news for them. None of them are speaking to each other anymore because they've all passed away. Half of these shuls that didn't speak to each other anymore have all closed down. That's the sad truth. A machloikis, which is about personal issues, can never survive the inevitable grave of everybody. Whereas a machloikis about truth will continue and continue and continue because ideas far outlive people. And that's really the point that's going on here. A very important, straightforward first principle, but that is the basic line between them. Now, that doesn't mean that every time you have a machlokas l'shem shamayim, that people are in it for the sake of heaven, that that's always going to work. We'll see soon the Netziv, he negates that entirely, but we'll in principle, that's a good way forward. Okay, fine. Let's start now our analysis of the four different types of machlokas. So the best type of machlokas, the ideal machlokas, the one we love as Jews, we can't get enough of, is the machlokas to try and find MS in a more abstract way. Let's look at this Midrash Tehillim. This has got nothing to do with fighting between people. On the contrary, this is the other extreme, which is the one we so appreciate. Number four. Amar Rabbi Yanai. It's a Midrash in Tehillim. Amar Rabbi Yanai, lo nitna divrei Torah chatichin. The Torah wasn't given in pieces, like sound bites. It wasn't given in a clean, cut-off way. Everything that God said to Moshe at Sinai or beyond, whenever, he would give him 49 ways of understanding that it was tameh, pure, impure, 49 ways of understanding it was pure. 98 answers for everything, all different from each other. Moshe says to God, I need some clarity. What am I going to tell the people? You know, you ring up and ask a shaila to a rav, and you say, what's the answer? And he gives you 98 fascinating different ways of relating to the question. Okay, time for a new rabbi. I don't need that from my rabbi. I need tachlis. I need a psak. So Moshe says, what am I going to tell them? Amalei, God says to them, fine, you want tachlis? Achrei rabim lahatos. Follow the majority. It's a bit random, really. Whatever the majority say, that's going to be the final psak of the Sanhedrin. Rabu matamim tame, rabu matamim tame. If the majority of the Sanhedrin decide it's going to be impure, that's the psak. If they decide pure, that's the psak. But it could have gone either way, because they're both truths. They are multiple truths. They both come from a legitimate place of emes, from God, and the actual final decision of whether it's going to be this one or that one is really a human decision. It could have gone either way. This, of course, is the famous phrase, elu ve'elu, divrei elukim chaim. By the way, this number 49, where does this number 49 come from? This is a very highly symbolic number. 49 is, of course, 7 on steroids. That's the point. 7 represents the maximalist understanding of this world. This is a Maharal idea, 7 and 8. It's quite a well-known idea. 6 directions plus time. Time is always the number 7. That's as far as we can get in this world. 8 is already beyond. Okay, 8 is Brit Milah, 8 is the spiritual, Shmini Atzeret, etc., Yom HaShmini. So 7 on steroids, 7 in its most extreme expression is 7 squared, 49. So when you need to talk about the most you can possibly get out of this world, that's 49 and 49. Of course, the other example of 7 on steroids is 70. Shivim Panim Latora. Same idea. It's just a 7 which is up to the next level. And that's why 50 is 8 on steroids, if you like. The ultimate 8 is 50, which is why the Yom HaMishim is the day that you count towards but never reach. Sefirat HaOmer is the ultimate tease in the sense that God says count 50 days, you count, you get to 49, and you reset to 0. That's because you can never get beyond 49. 49 is the maximalist way achievement in this world. So these numbers, of course, are highly symbolic, but what it's saying is that there are multiple truths. Number 5. This is the Ritva brings Elu Ve'elu into this. This Midrash didn't mention Elu Ve'elu, these and those, but he does. Elu Ve'elu Divrei Elokim Chaim. Shalu Rabbeinu Tzarfat, the rabbis of France, asked the following. The Ritva was in Spain. The rabbis of France says, Heich Eshashi Yushneim Divrei Elokim Chaim, Vezeo Yisuf Vezeo Maseh. Come on, how can they both be true if one says yes and one says no? The Tivtu, and they answer, and this Midrash, Kishyale Moshe Lamarome, Moshe went on high, Lekabel Torah, Haro Eloi, I call Dibu V'Dibu Mentes Panim Le'itza Mentes Panim Le'itza. He just quotes this Chazal, this Midrash, 49 different ways of this, of that. V'shalach Kodesh Baruch Hu zeva amashiyim zem masur lechachmei Yisrael shebechol dor vador. Exactly what the Midrash says, that the rabbis in each generation would decide between these two legitimate truths, the achra kemaisem, and that's going to be the halacha. Says the Ritva at the end, a little bit of a tease to something else. V'nochen hu lefi adrash. This is a nice drash. This is a midrashic level of understanding. Ubederecha emes. But if you want to get into Kabbalah more mystically, yesh tam yivisodafa. There's an even deeper reason. He doesn't mention it, but the Maharshal does. I think that I just got a little message that my internet flickered a little bit, but I think I'm back with you again. Hopefully you can see me. Yes. Good. I'm hopefully everybody is with me. We had a little flutter then, but can everybody see me again? Thumbs up? Excellent. Fine. We don't worry about little flutters like that. We get past them. Fine. So the Maharshal, the Yamshal Shlomo, he gives you the Kabbalistic understanding. If you look at this beautiful idea in number 6. Hamakubalim Kasvatamadava, the Kabbalists have given the deeper reason. Every neshama was at Har Sinai. The kiblu derech mem says sinorot. Says that number again, and they received through 49 different channels sinorot. Sinor means like a channel or a pipe. The heina kolas. These are the voices, the sounds that they heard at Sinai. Asheshamu v'gamro, that they could see. How can you see a sound? The answer is it's not a sound. It's information download. Everybody stood at Sinai, says the Maharshal, 400 years ago, and received downloaded Torah on a different wavelength. The Chol Yisrael Roy Metakolis, the Jews could see this information, Hemadeus, meaning the knowledge, Hamid Chakot, the Tinor, and they're all coming differently. Kol Echad Ra Derech Tinor Shelo, each one saw through his own channel, the Fi Hasagot according to his own understanding or her own understanding, the Kibel B'ti Kach Nishmaso, and their own Neshama El, Yon L'Roy V'Lua, or Pechistus, higher or lower depending on the person, Zerah Chok Mizeh, Ad She Echad Yagia L'Tahor, until one person could stand at Sinai, listen, and say, God said, Tahor, a second person could hear exactly the same thing through his own channel and see Tamei, the opposite. And they're all that. So on a certain level, there's something highly subjective about the way we see Torah, we perceive Torah. We're like diamonds reflecting a light in a uniquely different way with different facets. And that's why we're very excited about people's different opinions. Let's just bring this idea to a close. The Gemara in Bracha says, Tana Rabbanan Harayich Lusi Yisrael. If you see 600,000 Jews all in one place, this is worth learning in advance in case you walk around the corner in Hendon or whatever and see 600,000 Jews. Actually, unlikely in Hendon. More likely in Yerushalayim. I'll tell you a story about that in a second. If you see 600,000 Jews, you say, Baruch Chacham Harazim. Say a Bracha, Baruch Atah Hashem, Elokeinu Melech Haolam. Chacham harazim. God is the wise knower of all secrets. Why? She'ein dasam doniz elazeh. Each of these people has a different opinion. Each of these Jews has 6 different opinions. Ve'ein partzufehim doniz elazeh. Just like they all have different faces. That's the bracha, says the Gemara. Just like when I see your faces, this actually is very beautiful, I see your faces on the screen, here in front of me, you know, 100, 120 different faces. Everybody's face is different. I never asked you to take my face. You wouldn't want it, I promise you. Okay? Just like I don't ask you to accept my face, I don't ask you to accept my opinion. Everyone's face is unique. Everyone's opinion is unique. That's the bracha we make. I tell you, just agav, I once hoped to make this bracha. I was all prepped. I went to the Levaya of Rav Avadi Yosef, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, which was in Yerushalayim about 7 years ago. I don't know if anyone else was there. There were 750,000 Jews in the Levaya. So I thought, everybody knew in advance it was going to be the biggest event since, the Beis HaMikdash. So I was all prepped to say this bracha. Sadly, in the Levaya, I only saw 2 people the whole afternoon. The guy that was squashed in my face like this, and the guy that was squashed in my face like that. They're the only 2 people I saw. I walked all the way there, I walked all the way back. My son, he's got Chacham Einav Barosha, he's got more sense than me. He ran to the top of one of the buildings in Ezra's Torah, he looked down, he said the bracha. They said there were about 1,000 people on the roof of this building, and then the guy from the top floor runs up and starts screaming that there are cracks in his building because all these people are making the building. Okay, you know, it's a balagan. It's Eretz Yisrael, don't worry, it'll be fine. Everyone ran down, back in the street again. Fine. But I never got to say the bracha. I'm still waiting. Ve'ezrat Hashem one day. But that's the bracha that we make. And that's why I brought you these quite famous pictures. I'm sure you're familiar with them. You know, is it a duck? Is it a rabbit? You know, some people see a duck. Some people see a rabbit. The classic old woman, young woman. Some people are looking at this saying, I can see the young woman, but I can't see the old woman. And some people are looking at it saying, I can only see the old woman, but I can't see the young woman. And some people see both, and some people... Fine. And you can think about that later and look at that in your own time. The point is, though, that there are two legitimately different ways, correct ways, of seeing this picture. And just let me give you a midrashic take on this, which is to finish this topic, which is this ideal machlokas. The Gemara, the Midrash rather, says, Amar Reb Tzimah B'Shashe Bar Kodesh Baruch Hu Livrat Et Adam HaRishon, when Adam HaRishon was created, Nasu Malchei Asharis Kitim Kitim Chaburas Chaburas. The angels split off into factions. We'll talk about that soon. Chaburas Chaburas. Okay? They split into different factions. They rebelled. By the way, that is a Midrashic symbol. This idea of the angels rebelling, the Beis HaLevi talks about it. Rav Yosef Soloveitchik, the original, he says that when the Midrash says that the angels rebel, it means God is about to do something that cuts through the normal cause and effect. Angels are bureaucrats. Malachim are bureaucrats. They're systems people. They're Rosh Katan. By definition, they're the ultimate Rosh Katan. They do what they're told and only what they're programmed to do. So when God is about to do something radically outside the system, that is expressed midrashically as if the Malachim rebel. That's what it means, like the splitting of the sea, or the giving of the Torah, etc. When God creates the human being, the angels rebel. Mehem omrim al yivra. Some said, don't create man. Mehem omrim yivra. Some said, do create man. Chesed ome yivra. Chesed says, yes, create mankind. Shehu goma chasadin. He does wonderful chesed. Emes ome al yivra shekulam shkarim. Emes says, you can't create people. They're just sheker. People are not emes. There's emes in heaven, but there's no emes on the earth. People are sheker. Tzedek oimer, tzedek, fairness, justice says, yivra, create him, shehu oseh tzedakos. Shalom oimer, al yivra, shekul katata. Shalom says, don't create him. Fine. What happens? Masa HaKadosh Baruch Hu says this in Midrash. What did God do? Natal emet, he took emet, this malach, this power, this idea of emet, the truth, v'hishlichu la'aretz, and he threw it out of heaven. This angel of emet was thrown down to the ground, says the Midrash. Quote from Daniel, V'tashlech emet arza. You threw emet to the ground. Amru malchei asharis. Now the angels go really ballistic. Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribbono al olamim. They said, how can this be? How can you undermine your entire purpose? This is the olam ha'emet. This world, the world of the olam haba, the world of the malachim, the world of God is the ultimate world of truth. How can you throw truth into the human world? Replies God in the Midrash, Tala emet min aretz, because I want truth to come from the ground up. Hadahuda says, that's why it says in Tehillim, emet min aretz tismach. Truth comes up from the ground. And that's the point. The point is that the truth that we have in this world is the best truth that we can possibly find. It comes from us. We can't reach the truth of Shamayim. Lo b'shamayim hi. We can't get that. We can't achieve that. Maybe there are yechidim, there are individuals who can access that, but that's usually invalidates them. Lo b'shamayim hi. The whole story, which we're not going to have today, Rabbi Yeshua, of Rabbi Eliezer, when Rabbi Eliezer brings down the voice from heaven, that's delegitimized. We can't have that. Emes is the best we can do, and the search for Emes and the machlokas about Emes is the very best kind of machlokas that they can possibly be. Okay, fine. Let's move on, because we've looked at the ideal Emes. Let's have a look at something a little bit less ideal, but still good. Number 9. Amar Rav Huna. How many times did Hillel and Shammai disagree? Now, we already talked about this idea, the machlokas l'shem Shamayim is Hillel and Shammai. A search for truth. B'shloisha makomos nechlechu Shammai v'Hillel. In three different places, and only three, says the Gemara in Shabbos, Hillel and Shammai disagreed. That's interesting. Only three? What happened to all this hundreds and hundreds of arguments between? The answer is no, that's Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. And we'll see what happened there. Gemara in Eruvin, coming up soon in Daf Yomi. Amar Rebbe Abba, Amar Shmuel. Shalosh Shanim Nechliku Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai. For 3 whole years, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel disagreed. They could not agree. This is the students of Hillel and Shammai. Halalu oimim halacha kemoisenu. Halalu oimim halacha kemoisenu. One group says the halacha is like us. The other group says, no, the halacha is like us. And they cannot resolve this debate. But although this is a debate for ideas, truth. Yatsa bat kol v'amru. A bat kol came out. A voice, I'm not getting into now what exactly a bat kol is, an intuitive voice, a semi-prophetic voice, and said, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim heim, these and these are the words of the living God, or the living words of God. Chayim might be on the words, meaning dynamic. Mayim chayim is moving water. So divrei chayim are moving words. There is a dynamism in this idea. So halacha ke beit hillel. But we're going to pass again. The halacha is like beit hillel. So the Gemara says, Kima acha she'elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. If indeed both are legitimate, both are coming from God, these and those, why on earth would you go one way or the other? I'll tell you why. Because Beit Hillel were more chilled. They were noach. They were more relaxed. They were more foregoing. They would teach their opinion, and the other person's opinion as well. They would teach both, which of course implies that Beit Shammai would not teach both. They would only teach their view. The La'od Elashimagdin and Divrei Shammai LeDivreihem, Divrei Beit Shammai LeDivreihem. They would teach their opinions earlier, before, in advance. That's why it always says in the Mishnah, Beit Shammai Omrim, Beit Hillel Omrim, because the Mishnah was edited by Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi from Beit Hillel, and he always puts Beit Shammai before Beit Hillel. Now that's interesting. We could spend an hour on this, which is not my topic today. But why is that a reason for the halacha to go like them? There's something that sounds, beginning to sound just a little bit off, a little bit strange, that Beit Hillel had the better midas, Beit Shammai, there was some problem with Beit Shammai, that they wouldn't give way, they were maybe too stubborn, they were too harif, we'll see that word is used about them, and we'll see that that's going to be something that we look at in more detail as we go on. Of course, you could argue, and the Mephoshim do, that I trust somebody who looks at both opinions intellectually, because I think that they've looked carefully at both sides of the argument, whereas Beit Shammai, I know that they think they're right, but, you know, they haven't looked as carefully at the other side as Beit Hillel have. Okay, I get that. But it does sound as though there's a Bein Adam L'Chaveiro issue a little bit going on here. Why is it that Beit Shammai are delegitimized for the way they act? Of course, you might say, well, why is anybody listening to a bas kol? You shouldn't be listening to a voice from heaven. Didn't I just say, Loba Shamayim hi, we don't listen to a bas kol? Tosfos asked this question, number 11, the Im Taima, if you want to ask me, my shana the loy taima lan ke bas kol de Rebbe Eliezer, why don't we follow the bas kol in that story in Baba Metzia, where the bas kol comes out and says, Rebbe Eliezer is always correct? And he gives a few answers, but Yesh Lama, one answer is, Jehassam haisa keneged rabin. Over there in Baba Metzia, the bas kol came out in favor of an individual. The Hatora Amra, and the Torah has already said, Achrei rabim lahata. Avat follow the majority. Aval hacha adrabah. Here, on the contrary, Beit Hillel have a rubber. Beit Hillel were the majority, and the bat call came out in favor of the majority. So good. So a bat call which goes with the majority is good. So of course you're asking yourselves, well, if there's a majority, why on earth do I need a bat call? You know, I don't need a bat call. Achrei rabim lahatzos. So look at this last line. The loy hutzruchu bat call ela mishum de Beit Shammai havu charifi tvei. Beit Shammai were very harif. They only listened to a bas kol. They wouldn't go with the majority. Why not? Because they said, we're right. And the Torah wouldn't want you to follow the majority if you're wrong. What, am I going to just, you know, follow you off the cliff? Like lemmings? And we're not going to do that. If we know we're right, and Shammai is called Shammai because they're connected with their Rebbe, Shammaya, which is connected to Shammayim, which is very objective, Sham, okay, that's the play. They said, we're not giving way if we know that we're right. And that's why they needed a voice from heaven. They only connected more with heaven, and therefore they needed a voice from heaven. But eventually that resolved the debate. And by the way, that was a resolution. Historically, the long debate between Beit Shammai, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel did at some stage resolve. The Gemara picks up on this debate and feeds this idea that I started talking about before, that if there's something not quite right going on here. It's not so ideal as the picture we saw before. Look at number 12. Mishirabu Talmidei Shammai VeHillel. When the Talmidim of Shammai and Hillel became numerous. Okay? Shaloi shimshu kol tarchem, they didn't serve their masters as well as they should have done. Rabu machlokes b'Yisrael, that's why there was so much more machloket, debate, dispute. V'nasi tarah k'shtei tarahs, and the Torah began to be like two Torahs. Schism. And that's not good. Two Torahs means that there's a fundamental divide going on within the Jewish people. Even so, and I'm not going to read all of Source 13 inside, but the Rambam in Source 13, you can read it on your own later, he says, it's not their fault, just maybe pick up one line. He said, in principle, the Rambam says, that if two people are on the same wavelength, then they don't disagree that much. Even if they have different minds, they don't disagree that much because they're working off the same principles, the same data. They're not going to have massive disagreements. But when people are products of their times, and don't forget, and this is what we're going to talk about now, Bet Hillel and Beit Shammai lived in incredibly turbulent times. In the lead up to the destruction and the aftermath of the destruction, says the Rambam, Ein l'hashimam b'kol zot. We can't blame them for this. This aspect is not their fault. We're not required to argue on the level of the previous generations which were greater than us. You can't blame Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel for not being like Yeshua and Pinchas. Ein lanu safik, we have no doubts. Just because they're not as good as their masters, we don't distrust them. Or kamoch aim lamar mem, or people before then even. Shakodish baruchu lot sivanu ba'avodasa al inyan zeh. This is actually a very beautiful line. God doesn't want us to be any, or doesn't require us to be any greater than we can be. We can't be what we can't be. There's no point looking back at the previous generation and saying, oh, if only we could have leaders like, That's not helpful. We get the leaders we deserve, and they do the best they can. But there's something which is not as wholesome, if you like, going on here, because the Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, they lived in times that didn't let them learn properly. And this takes us on from the good but not ideal machlokas to the actually bad machlokas. Have a look now with me, number 14. Lots of lovely sources about this. Lots of fascinating sources about the development of Torah Shebaal Peh. Look with me in number 14. Let me set the scene for number 14. There is a mitzvah of smicha. Smicha means that there is a mitzvah to put your hands on the animal on Yom Tov, and when you bring a korban, I should say. When you bring a korban, you bring a chatat or you bring a shlamim, whatever, there's a mitzvah to actually put hands on the animal hard and somehow transfer a little bit from oneself to the animal in whatever that means in the idea of the korban. Either the sin goes through to the animal and it's in place of the person, or the shira, whatever that is. I'm not getting into the details now. The question comes on Yom Tov, on Chag. Once they had developed the laws of Muksa, what is the status of smicha on Yom Tov? Do I lean on the animal? Because that's how I bring the sacrifice. Or do I say, no, I'm not allowed to use an animal on Chag, on Yom Tov. The halachas of Muksa on Yom Tov are actually a little bit stronger in some ways than the halachas of Muksa on Shabbos. So this is the debate that they're having. Look at number 14. Again, quite a well-known source. Yosef ben Yehuda on Mishalot Ismach. So Yosef ben Yehuda, he's the mid-second temple. He said, don't do smicha. Yosef ben Yochanan on Ismach, he said, no, you should do smicha. That overrides Muksa. Okay? Two different opinions. Next generation. Yeshua ben Parachia said, no, don't do smicha. Muksa is too important. Nitzei ha'arbeli omer lismach. Nitzei ha'arbeli said, yes, do smicha. Okay. Yehuda ben Tamai, next generation now, Yehuda ben Tamai said, shalom lismach, don't do smicha. Shimon ben Shetach omer lismach. They don't seem to be able to resolve this debate. Shamaya omer lismach. Shamaya says, do smicha. Avtalion omer shalom lismach. The next generation. Still can't agree. Hillel and Menachem loy nechleku. Now, who's Menachem? Hillel and Menachem agreed. Oh, that's a relief. Yatza Menachem, then Menachem had to leave, v'nichna Shammai, and Shammai came in. Exactly who Menachem is an entire share. He is one of the dark sheep of the Vaisheni period. He went off, basically, and became a Roman politician. More about him another time. But Shammai came in, and we're back to business as normal. Shammai omer shalom lismach, v'hillel omer lismach. Nobody can agree. Then Rashi comes in with a remarkable comment. Look at Rashi here at the end. Rashi says, V'zohi machloket rishona shehaita b'chachmi Yisrael. This was the first ever machlokas that the rabbis had. Really? This was the first ever machlokas that the rabbis had? Nobody disagreed about anything until this point? Every single page of Tanakh, everybody is screaming at each other. Everybody's disagreeing with each other. There are so many different disagreements, starting from Moshe and onwards. How could Rashi say this, mid to late Second Temple, was the first machloket, the first disagreement? So the answer seems very clear, and the Rambam backs this up as well, is that, no, it wasn't the first disagreement, it was the first disagreement that could not be resolved. That it was an ongoing disagreement, it was a festering sore that went through the Jewish people. Why? Because the body of people that are designed to resolve disagreements is the Sanhedrin. And when the Sanhedrin doesn't function, the people start to fall apart. And there is no way to resolve disagreement. And then you start off with factions. This group of rabbis says X. This group of rabbis says Y. And this becomes an ongoing battle. And the Torah becomes like two Torahs. Why did the Sanhedrin break down? So the Rambam in number 15 explains originally the idea of the Sanhedrin is if you didn't know the answer to a question, so you would ask your local Beit Din. It's Rambam and Hilchas Mamrin. And if they didn't know, you'd go to the next level Beit Din. And if they didn't know, you'd go to the next level Beit Din. Until eventually you went to the Sanhedrin that was on Har HaBayit. Okay? If they didn't know, they took a vote. If they didn't know, they would debate and they would vote. And then you have an answer. That's why the Sanhedrin always had to be an odd number. You can never get an equal divide. It's always going to be at least 36-35. However, look at the end, the Rambam, who is bringing the Gemara here, Mishebotel Beit Din HaGadol. When the Beit Din HaGadol, when the Sanhedrin was batel, was sidelined, nullified, it wasn't disbanded. It wasn't disbanded until much, much later. There was a Sanhedrin that limped on into the post-Korban era all the way until the Byzantine period, when the Byzantines eventually abolished the Sanhedrin and killed the last Nasi. But at this point, when the Sanhedrin is not functional, Rabsa Machlokas for Israel. Machlokas began to increase for the simple reason that nobody accepts the authority of the Sanhedrin. Zema Tameh Venoisin Tameh Dvarav. This rabbi says Tameh gives his own reasoning. The Zematar, and this rabbi says Tahor, and gives his own reasoning, Zeoise, Zematir, and you end up with a very fragmented picture. From two Torahs, to four Torahs, to eight Torahs, to hundreds of Torahs, to people basically fighting everywhere. And that's really what we're seeing here. There's another side to this machlokas. What have we seen so far? There's wonderfully ideal machlokas, where we're all refracting different ways of God's word. Just like we did at Sinai. That's fantastic. And then there's good machlokas when we're arguing the best that we can, but, you know, we're not perfect individuals and we don't always get everything right, etc. And God doesn't expect that of us. And then there's machlokas which is caused for no other reason than we just don't accept authority. We don't accept the unifying forces within society, and that creates that breakdown of society on a social level, was reflected in a breakdown of society in the oral Torah on a Torah level. And that, of course, is why they needed the Talmud. The Talmud was there to restore the level of authority and integrity to Torah that had been there when the Sanhedrin was there, but had now fragmented and been lost. And therefore, that's why we've never had another Talmud. You might ask yourself the question, why do we never have a second Talmud? Why did Rashi or Rambam not turn around and say, hey guys, it's been 600 years since the last one, let's make a new one? Because the purpose of the Talmud is to replace the Sanhedrin. And you don't need another Talmud. What you need is another Sanhedrin. And we had two shirim on that. If you remember, back in the day, attempts made over the years to replace and restart the Sanhedrin, and then we can sideline the Talmud and move on to a new system. But the point here is that the Talmud, the Gemara, the Mishnah and the Gemara was designed to restore some level of unity to the Jewish people. And it succeeded incredibly in doing that, at least until the modern period, to a large degree, because people accepted the authority of the Talmud. Of course, there was the Karaites. The Karaites did their own thing, but now is not the time to talk about that. So from here we need to get into the last and most depressing type of machlokas, which is the ugly, the really ugly, deep down vendetta type machlokas, which masquerades as a machlokas l'shem shamayim, because people are arguing, rabbis are arguing, but what's really going on here is people arguing about their own personal kavod, their own personal victory, and that just becomes no better than Korach and his band of men. And again, this feeds into machlokas in halacha. Look now at the last section here, 16 onwards. Look with me. Mishirabu the Tesefta. Mishirabu sechuche halev. From when these sechuche halev, these people of bad mind, heart, increased in the Jewish people, rabu machlokas, that's when machlokas increased, vehein hein shotchei damim, murderers. These are people who are violent people. This also contributed to machlokas. The Sanhedrin itself, in number 17, I brought you, exiled itself from the Temple Mount already 40 years before the destruction, because it couldn't anymore deal with the amount of bloodshed. It couldn't keep giving the death penalty because there was so much bloodshed in society around them. Look at these, look at this source in number 18. This is taken from the Gemara that we read on Tisha B'Av. Very sad. Havabuhu Hanu Biryoni. They were the zealots that existed at the time of the great revolt against Rome. Amar Lahem Rabbanan, the rabbi said to the zealots, Nepuk Banavid Shalma Bahadaihu, let's go and try and make peace with Rome. We can't beat the Romans. Let's make a peace deal with them. Loi Shavkinu, they wouldn't let them go. They wouldn't let them make peace. Amru Lahen, so the zealots said to them, Nepuk Banavid Krava Bahadaihu, let's go and fight the Romans. Amru Lahen Rabbanan, the rabbi said to them, Loi Nistai Milsa, you can never win. There's no point fighting a battle that you know from the beginning you can't win. It's a suicide mission. Which of course they said, okay, so we'll be suicidal. That's not the approach the rabbis accepted. Kamu v'kalnu lahanu ha'amburi v'chiti v'sa'iri, the zealots, in order to make the people desperate, they got up and they burned down the storehouses of wheat, of barley. They had enough food to survive the siege, the Roman siege, for years and years. The zealots burned down the food. They destroyed the stores, the Havakafna, and there was a famine, and that made the people desperate. Desperate people may as well go on a suicide mission, because what have they got to lose? They got to die anyway. So this incredibly, the virulent breakdown was reflected as well in Torah, and it's important to understand this. Here's a source that doesn't get quoted that much, but it's in the Gemara in Shabbos. Just look how tragic these next three sources are in terms of learning. And they're still about Hillel and Shammai. This is the other side, the ugly side of the coin. Look with me, number 19. Habotze Lagat. Now this is talking about the mitzvah of Mach Shirin. And Mach Shirin means, in order for something to be capable of picking up Tumah, spiritual impurity, it has to have been wet, it has to have been moistened with one of the specific seven liquids. The Shivat HaMashkem, Dam, Shachar, Yad Shachar, Dam, Yayin, Dvash, etc., etc. Now, one of these is shemen, oil from olives, and one of these is mitz from yayin, from grapes. So the question here is as follows. If I'm going into the grape harvest, right now, if the grapes are almost ready to go, okay? If I'm doing the grape harvest, do I have to send in people to do the grape harvest who themselves are tohor? Are they going to make the grapes tame? I don't want my grapes to be tame. I might want to eat them, give them to the Kohen. I want the truma. I might want to take them to the Mikdash. Do I have to send in pure people? Because if the grapes are dry, then I don't have to worry, because you can't pick up impurity if it's not been wet. But if the grapes are moist, and anyone who's ever done a grape harvest knows that the grapes get a little bit wet, they squeeze out a little juice, so then I've got a problem, because the people are going to have to be tahor going in, because the grapes are going to become impure. That's the background. So says the Gemara here, Habotze Lagat, if you're doing, if you're sending in people to harvest grapes for the gat, for wine making, meaning I don't want the juice to come out. I don't want to lose my juice. I need my juice. Shamai Omer Huksha says, no, that's still considered liquid, which is acceptable that you want it to come out, and therefore these grapes could be tamei, you've got to send in tahor people. Hillel Omer Lo Yochsha, Hillel said, no, it's fine. That juice that comes out is loyla ratzon. You don't want that juice to come out. You're losing your wine, and therefore it's fine. Okay? Amar lo Hillel to Shammai, Hillel says to Shammai, look closely with me. Mipnei ma boitzrim b'tara, according to you, okay, or why would you have to be tahor for the grape harvest? The ein maiskim betara, but not for the olive harvest. Hillel accused Shammai of inconsistency. They say, you tell me that the guys have to be tahor to come in for the grape harvest because the juice that comes out is relevant. Why don't you say that for olives? You're okay with olives. Shammai and Hillel, look what he says. Amalai, he said to him, in taknitaini, if you keep on irritating me, goes rani tuma afala masika, then I'm going to be machmir on the olive harvest as well. I'll make a new chumrah if you don't leave me alone, and I'll make a new rule that everyone has to be tahor for the olive harvest. Whoa, that's like, I'm just asking a question. That's what happens. That's Shammai's response. Now, to cherev the Bet Midrash, they put a sword down in the Bet Midrash. But Amr, they said, hanichnas yikanes, if you want to come in, you can come in. But no one's leaving. But oisa hayom haya Hillel kafuf for Yoshev lifnei Shammai, they made Hillel, the Nasi, sit subdued in front of Shammai, ke'echad min ha-talmidim. They treated him like a schlepper. They treated him like a Talmud. And that was as destructive to the Jewish people as the day of the golden calf. Now, this is unusual. This is Hillel and Shammai. This is machlokas l'shem Shammayim, as the Mishnah portrayed. And yet it's not a happy picture at all. It's a very unhappy picture. Hillel is being, if you like, bullied into being subdued to Shammai because Shammai packed the house with their people. Another story like this, look at number 20. Elumina Alocha Shamru Ba'aliyas Hanani Ben Chizkiah Ben Gurion. This is quite a well-known episode at the beginning of Gemara Shabbos. Normally Hillel was the majority. There was an occasion when Shammai managed to get their people in, Bet Shammai. This is already with Bet Shammai and Bet Hillel. And they managed to make a majority, and they said, it's like politics, right? Now we've closed the doors, let's pack the house, let's have a filibuster debate, and let's make sure that we get our Shammai legislation through. Okay? Nimnu v'rabo be Shammai al Beit Hillel. They found out that Beit Shammai were more than Beit Hillel. Okay? And on that day, Shmona Asa Davar Gozer Rabbi Yom, they made 18 new decrees. All very technical chumras, almost all of them. Stringencies in Tumah and Tara. And that day was also as damaging, as awful to the Jewish people as the day that the temple was, that the golden calf was destroyed, was made. Why is it so bad? So they made some new chumras. Rabbis like making chumras sometimes, right? No. The point is this. Rav Herschel Schechter says that the Jewish people were destroying themselves. The temple was effectively already burning through internal debate. And all Bet Shammai want to do is make new stringencies in ritual law. People are killing each other. And that's what the Sanhedrin's focusing on. Look at this terrible Gemara in Yuma, number 21. Tana Rabbana, Masa b'shnei Kohanim. It was a story of two Kohanim, Shehayu Shneim Shavim. They were running up the ramp, and they used to have a race to see who gets up the ramp first. The one at the top of the ramp can be the one that does the service from then on. Okay? They were both the same place. The Ratzim va'olim akevesh. Okay, they were going up the ramp. Kadam echad mehem letoich arba amas shel chavari. One managed to get within four amas of the other. He's catching him up. Natal sakin v'takibob libo. He took out a knife, the one who was ahead, and thrust it into the heart of the cone that was running behind him. And he obviously fell on the floor, dying. Ba'avid shel tinok. The young man's father, the young man who was now dying with a knife in his chest, runs up. Umatsa Kushuhuma Farpre found him still twitching, almost dead. Amar, he said, Harehu Kaparasam. He said, Baruch Hashem. It's not as bad as you think. Adaim Bani Mafarpe, my son is still twitching. The loin nitmasakin, the knife is not tummy. Oh, at least we didn't bring Tuma into the Beis HaMikdash. His own son has just been murdered, and he's focused on the knife. Says the Gemara, the Lamdacha Shikasha Aleim Taras Kalim. The purity of the knives was more important to them. Yosef Meshvichos Damim. This is not praise. This is a terrible, terrible internal destruction of Torah itself, not just of the politics, but of the Torah. And perhaps the apex, the apogee of this in number 22 in the Yerushalmi, Oisa Yamai Akashi Yisrael Kiyom Shinata Ba'Egel. This Bet Shammai Bet Hillel dispute. Tan Rabbi Yeshua Unya, Rabbi Yeshua Unya, this was his name. Talmidei Beit Shammai Amdu Lahem Lamata, they placed the Talmidim of Beit Shammai on the ground floor. V'hayo Horigin B'Talmidei Beit Hillel. They murdered, the place actually erupted into a fight. They murdered the Talmidim of Ben Hillel. Tani Shisha Mehem Alu V'Hashar Amdu Alehim B'Charevos U'Baramachim. They stood over each other with swords and spears. This is where it can lead. That's where it can, this is where it can go. Even with Bet Shammai, even with Bet Hillel, if people do not keep a focus on where Machlokas is headed. And it doesn't go straight from ideal to the most ugly in one go, it goes through stages. I just want to really finish with two important sources, but I just want to show you in between that there are two mitzvahs in the Torah not to have personal Machlokas. One of them is that there's a mitzvah not to be like Korach, which is a Torah mitzvah. People don't often realize that that is a mitzvah in the Torah. The lo yeh k'korach ka'adasai. That is mitzvah, one of them, okay, the 613, not to perpetuate personal machlokas. And the other one is loisis goydidu. Do not factionalize, okay? Now, on a pshat level, lotit kodidu means do not make scratches on the skin, okay? And the rabbis came in and said, number 29, lotit kodidu lotasu agudot agudot. Don't make factions with the Jewish people. Classically, a Beit Din, two Bate Din in one town who are in the same community. One second, something has gone a little bit wrong here. Oh, am I back with you again? Good, excellent. Every now and then there's a little bit of a freeze and my camera doesn't like talking to my computer. Baruch Hashem, we've solved the problem. I know how to kind of solve it now more. I used to crawl under the table and start pulling all the leads out and putting them back in again. But I found a better way to do that now. But the point here is that there is a mitzvah of not being like Korach, and there's also a mitzvah of loisis goydidu. What is loisis goydidu? Don't make scratches on the skin. What's that got to do with factionalism? How is that related to the idea of don't make factions within the Jewish people? Two different groups arguing with each other in the same community. So I heard, I don't remember where I heard this, it could be it's a Sfat Emet, I may have got that wrong, but I heard once, it's the same idea. If someone, God forbid, is so distressed that they take one hand and they injure the other one on the same body because they're so, like, what are you doing? It's one body. Why, you know, if by mistake you're hammering a nail in and you hit your hand with a hammer, you don't pick up the hammer with the other hand and then hit the hand that hit the other hand. Say, how dare you hit my hand? It's the same person. So if you're making scratches on your own body, you're failing to see the unity of the person. So too, if you're factionalizing the Jewish people from within, you're failing to see that it's really one body, it's one neshama together. And these are real mitzvahs. These are not just fluffy ideas. These are fundamental. I brought you a couple of sources, 31, 32, talking about the power of Shalom. Even the generation of Achav that were steeped in Avodah Zorah and the deepest sexual immorality, they were unified, they succeeded. Whereas the generation of David, who were much bigger tzaddikim, they had infighting and informers, they did not succeed. Let me finish with you with two sources, one of which is famous, the other which is less famous. The more famous source, which is 33, they're both from the same author, they're both from the Netziv, but I want to read number 34 really, because it's less well known. Number 33 is the Netziv's introduction to the Chumash, where he says, Tzadik v'yashar hu, that God is yashar, we say that in Hazinu, we are praising God for what he did to the generation in the second temple in the destruction, because that generation, look at what he says here, Shehayu tzadikim, second line here, Shehayu tzadikim, these people were tzadikim, chasidim, goyim lechasadim, oim le'tayra, they were from a yidden, the second temple time, achloi hayu sharim ba'alichas olenda, but they weren't straight people. They weren't honest with each other. Someone that they didn't like the way that they keep their religious beliefs, they would just label them, call them Sadukim, Sadducees, Apikorisim, and that's how the whole thing fell apart, because people just labeled each other. And he says there famously, God can't bear Tzadikim like that. Because they give the impression of being connected to Torah, and yet they're destroying the Jewish people from within. But I think in many ways the more fascinating source is number 34. And I want to leave you with this idea as we go into Tisha B'Av tonight, which is as follows. Look what the Netziv says. The Netziv in number 34 in the 1870s, 80s, was facing a lot of calls from extremists in Europe, not extremists, but people to disassociate from many parts of the Jewish people. People who were drifting towards the reform movement, people who were drifting into the Haskalah, and there were calls to just detach, leave them. They're not Jews anymore. We have to run from these people and protect the Torah. And he says, I don't think that's the way to go. Look what he says, let's learn this together at the end of the shir. B'shar shehainu ba'aretzeinu ha'kadosha. When we were in our holy land, he writes in his tshuva here. U'b'rishuteinu kimad, and we were pretty much autonomous. The Bayit Sheni, in the Bayit Sheni, ne'etam eretz, the land went dark. V'charav ha'bayis, and the temple was destroyed. V'gala Yisrael, the sibat machlokas. And because of machlokas, the Jewish people were sent into exile. Okay, ha'purushim im ha'tzadikim, of the Pharisees and the Sadducees, all Jews. And the Sadducees were wrong, the Tzadukim were wrong, but because of that machlokas, that caused the problem. V'gam heitzev machma sinat chinam, because of the sinat chinam, one thing led to another, harbe shvich ha'savim ma'she'ein min adin. Unauthorized, extrajudicial killings, etc. Hainu b'shar she'ra'al perush echad, when one Pharisee saw another person, meikul be'ezi davar, being lenient in something. Afar gashaloi hayat stuki, the guy wasn't a stuki. He was just like not as frum as the other person. Al asavera, he just did an avera. Yeah? You never did an avera in your life? Someone else does an avera? Mikol maka machma sinat chinam, because of this rejection? And again, it's not baseless hatred. We saw this 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. It's rejection from a person's mind that you're not my family, you're not my kind of Jew. They would judge him. This brings everything we've talked about in the last 3 weeks together. Because of their rejection, they would judge them inappropriately, like a Tzaduki, and then that would allow them to a Tzaduki, oh, he's a heretic, I can push him off, you know, into the pit. And they allowed themselves to kill Ulashem Mitzvah. It doesn't help that they were Lashem Shamayim. They were all zealots. But it didn't help. They weren't really doing it in the Shem Shammai. Because there ain't rachok min adas la'agiyah chas v'shalom ba'etz kezot. He says, this could happen again. This could happen to the Jews in 1860, 1870 in Russia. Gam ken asher al pi ros eini ha'echad mi machziki hadat. One religious Jew would see another. Yid meshaploini einu mitnayig al pi darko ba'avodas Hashem will see another Jew who doesn't behave in to their taste. V'yishpatenu, when they will judge them l'minas to be a heretic. And then everyone would end up killing each other. God forbid the Jewish people could be destroyed. And look how he leaves it. And it won't help if we go back to Israel. This was the beginning of Chibat Zion. This was the beginning of religious Zionism. He said people think that going back to live in Israel will solve the problem. He says it won't solve the problem. If you can't solve the problem within the Jewish people, you'll just retransplant the problem back into Eretz Israel, and it'll end up even worse than it was before. And we see with our own eyes that working on the problem is the solution, rather than just pretending that if we live in Israel, everything is fine. But this we know already, Shkoyach, but we need to hear it again, and we need to think about it and work on it. So just to kind of finish off, I think we've seen here that Machlokas is a multifaceted idea. There's wonderful machlokas that we make a brocha on. We love the fact that people have different understandings of MS, and we celebrate that fact. And then there's good machlokas where people are trying their best, even if they're not doing it always perfectly. And then there's bad machlokas when people don't accept authority and they begin to factionalize. And then there's terribly ugly machlokas when people pretend that they're doing things l'shem shamayim, and they invoke the zealous, you know, fighting for God, but really it's about covered, it's about personal srara, about victory over others, which is the worst kind of machlokas. And therefore, you know, we have to try and get the right kind of machlokas. Do the one that we make a bracha on rather than the others. And in Yetz Hashem, we'll be able to reduce and then remove the sinat chinam and move to better places. So I hope everyone has a meaningful fast. I hope it's not too hot. And I hope people know when they have to break the fast, if they have to break the fast. But please God, we will reconvene on the other side next Wednesday. We will look to other issues, fascinating halachic kashkafic issues, and hopefully move towards an Elul which will look brighter and happier and healthier for everybody. So with that, I leave you, and thank you again for the sponsorship, and have a wonderful week. All the best. Nice to see you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. All the best.